that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
Let's go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
I do talk about remote work a lot, and I found somebody even more passionate about it than me. And he's been building global teams focused around delivering it remotely. Andy Treva joins me as the CEO of Gigster on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Andy, I'm excited to talk to you because I want to start with a, before we get to the AI and the remote work stuff, I actually want to understand a little bit more about Gigster. You've got one of those great buzzword descriptions because it's a company that accelerates the delivery of digital transformation. But when I dug into it, it sounds like it's outsourcing projects. Am I getting it right at a simple level? You want to explain to me a little bit what Gigster does?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know sometimes when you have fancy words like transformation, it kind of gets a little confusing. But 100%, think of us as a firm that assembles these cloud development teams of the best people from around the world, assemble them into AI-enhanced teams, and then enable companies to grab them and be able to do various software projects. And sometimes that's an expansion of their teams. And other times it's, you know, hey, I've got this very specific project that I want to do. Can you guys just staff it up with experts and go run with it and come back to me?
So who are you targeting with that? Because obviously you're selling that directly. What's the profile of the customers you're looking for?
Yeah, most of our companies are Fortune 500 firms that basically would rather fire up these cloud teams because they're way faster to put together. If you think about hiring, you know, oftentimes in these firms, it takes 6 to 9 months. Usually we can form a team within 28 or 48 hours. Then two, it also enables them to be able to go experiment in these various spaces and kind of go develop an MVP for a specific project or whatever else it may be to see whether or not that goes and is effective. And then they can go staff it up if that's the case. And most of our companies are Fortune 500. We also have a bunch of, you know, mid-market firms that would rather go and, again, instead of hiring a bunch of people, go staff up, you know, these types of experts. Because one of the beauties that we have is the ability to go find experts, you know, because it's hard to go and hire, you know, to the right people. But for us, we have the ability, again, to go find those people around the world and assemble them into teams and then give them to customers to go run their projects.
Okay, cool. So many of the listeners here are those kinds of companies that are helping their own customers with their technology needs. What are the kind of projects that are a perfect fit for working with Gigster?
Yeah, we do a wide variety of different types of projects, right? But most of the projects that we do are more on the leading edge, right? So if you're talking about, hey, how do I, you know, integrate AI and some of the open AI APIs into my products? How do I go, you know, do some of the Web3 things? How do I go do the advanced things that it's really hard for me to be able to either take my current team and be able to go have them go do because they don't have the skill sets for it. But it's really expensive for me to go hire these machine learning guys and these AI guys, right? So you're better off then using Gigster to be able to go staff up those teams. So we don't do some of the commodity low-end things that, you know, your typical outsourcer would do. We end up kind of being in the more advanced technology space.
Okay, gotcha. So that helps frame it. Now, there's two areas that I want to learn a little bit more of what you've learned from. And the first space that I want to talk about actually is that AI bit. Lots of buzz, right? And what I'd like to hear a little bit more from you is like, what are some of the practical use cases that you're seeing customers be successful with right now?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of, you know, there's a lot of experimentation obviously going on in this space where, you know, you've got people just kind of playing with ChatGPT and various use cases on developing content and things like that. But the more interesting use cases are actually when people are starting to embed the AI APIs actually into their products themselves. So for example, we've got companies on the ERP side of the world that are like, hey, you know what? There's a bunch of data sitting in the back end here that, you know, why not be able to ask it questions and kind of put natural language processing on that to be able to enhance my roadmap? Or we've got other folks that are saying, hey, you know what? How do I take a look at all of these files that I have over here on the risk management side of the world to be able to pull information in it? So it's really more using APIs to then aggregate that information and then display it in a super easy way. And that's the more interesting use cases that we're seeing with a lot of firms today. But it takes a lot of expertise to go make that happen, of course. You know, you got to have, you know, the ability to pull those APIs. You got to really know also the security policies on what you are, you know, allowing into the public domain versus being able to do the APIs internal and maintaining that data internal.
Okay. Now, I would think you're dealing with a lot of hiring and recruiting or engagements, whatever that relationship looks like with the teams. It might be employees, it might be contractors, it could be all different bits. So you probably have some pretty good insights into how AI is changing employment. Can you give us a little bit of insight on what you're seeing on the ground?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to that, right? Where, you know, if you think about, you know, the big fear, which is, oh, hey, AI is going to take everyone's jobs. All these software developers and what have you, they're going to go away. I fundamentally disagree with that. You know, if you look out throughout throughout history, you know, whenever you see a lot of this new technology come out, more jobs are created and you get more AI enhanced roles versus, you know, being able to be a display. So I believe from a software development perspective, that if you look at the productivity that people can have with a lot of these AI tools that make them actually, you know, produce better code, be able to go through the code and do, you know, auto, finding of bugs and fixing of bugs. And these are all things that make the software developer better. And therefore, you can then be able to do more things. So fundamentally, from a hiring perspective, I believe that this actually accelerates the ability to do projects as opposed to, hey, I'm going to go and get rid of a bunch of these software development, folks that are there. Now, it also helps on the front end side of it. So we use it for, really evaluating people's code that they have out there in the public domain to really understand who's a great developer versus average developer. It helps us look at the various resumes that we have coming in and kind of parse out the folks that are kind of important that will contribute to the different roles, but also helps us auto form teams. And so we can kind of look at all of the people that we have in our network and say, great, you know, this customer is looking for this specific use case. Who do we have that would be the best fit for that? And rather than going through, you know, thousands of people, it will actually pull that out and assemble the team for us. So, you know, I think that there's a bunch of enhancements in there. And obviously, we can talk about this for 10,000 hours. But my net conclusion is that it is net positive as opposed to a net negative.
Okay, so I'm gonna throw out a premise then, and I'm going to ask you to react to it. And I think I know how you might go, but I just want to verify it. I've been working under the premise that I don't think AI is going to eliminate jobs. I think jobs would get replaced by people that understand AI. And the risk is not that the AI will automate away your job. It's that you'll get replaced by somebody that understands the AI. What's your reaction to that line of thinking?
100%, right? If you are anyone really going into the workforce, even anyone in the workforce today, if you are not actively figuring out, how I can use AI in my job, how I can really go to the advanced class of AI, how do I really go bring that into, you know, whatever I'm doing, then you are, you know, basically legacy at that point in time. Like every single CEO, every single, you know, person in every single division should be there saying, hey, how do I use this technology to go make my job 1,000 times better, make my output 1,000 times better? And it is possible. And you will be replaced by people that do have that domain expertise. And again, you don't have to learn how to code it necessarily. I mean, obviously, if you're in the software world, you need to go learn how to use all the APIs and what have you. But everyday people need to go and at least play around with technology and say, how do I go make my job better? And if you don't do that, then it's, you know, and then unfortunately it's, you're kind of sealing your own fate.
Gotcha. All right. Now the other area I want to talk a little bit about is remote workers. And I think there's a link between the two. I think generative AI and those technologies are going to play a role with the way we work with remote workers. And I think you've got an opinion here too. You want to weigh in a little bit and tell me what your thinking is on how the two come together?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting in a post-COVID world that everyone has largely accepted remote work as something that can actually work, but also has downsides, right? And we've been doing remote work now for 15 years, so we feel like we're domain experts on that. But this is where the AI side of it can enhance the remote work significantly. One is obviously on the recruiting side of the world, where you're finding people from around the world and really assembling them into the right teams. But you're looking at the deeper elements of what makes a great team, right? Just because, you know, someone has something on their resume doesn't necessarily mean that this person and that person are going to fit well together. So how you can actually then use AI to really go look at those team dynamics of not only how you form them, but then also how they continue to work over time, because there's lots of sentiment analysis and things like that you can do on determining whether or not, you know, that team is actually functioning well. But then you could also start going to the advanced class of really looking at the cultural elements that are needed to make remote work actually function well. Because again, if you just throw people out there with a webcam and say, hey, good luck, it's just not good enough. You have to go to the advanced class, and the advanced class has got, again, how do you hire and assemble teams? How do you manage them and really work on remote culture? And then really, how do you then help that team really make decisions on an asynchronous basis since people are spread out? So AI has a tremendous impact on being able to how all of those workflows do impact remote work. And again, I believe it's net positive.
Okay. Now, you said sort of everyone's kind of come to the conclusion about remote work. I could push back and I could say, well, Mark Zuckerberg's pulling people back in. Google's pulling back in. Jamie Dimon's come out on record and he's pulling back in. What's your reaction to that movement that's happening sort of right now?
Yeah, I believe that most of those people are wrong. And the reason is that they never went to the advanced class. They took the structures of in-person work and then just gave everyone a webcam and said, well, I hope this is going to work, right? But they never changed the way that they actually, you know, did their work, right? And that's where the fundamental problem is. And then if you never actually go to that advanced class, then you shouldn't do remote work. right? Where, again, if you didn't leverage the fact that, you know, you're using a truly global workforce and instead still recruiting people, you know, in and around the driving distance from your office, then you shouldn't do remote work. If you're still, you know, requiring people to sit on hours and hours of meetings like they were in the office, but now you just have them in front of a webcam, like that's not going to work. If you're not actually, you know, enabling asynchronous decision making across your organization, it's not going to work. If you're not focusing on, you know, remote culture and how you actually can use the fact that people are, you know, all around the world or at home as a benefit to actually get to know them better, then it's not going to work. So a lot of these people never went to the advanced class. And as a result of that, they're saying, oh, it doesn't work. We're going to pull everyone back, right? And honestly, you know, I end up believing that you need to be in one of two situations. The full in-person work world obviously works. It's been, you know, working since, you know, the dawn of employment, right? But it's legacy and it's fine, right? But everyone should then be, you know, in the office, right? But then you have a fully remote world, which has gotten tremendous power because, again, you have the ability to recruit the best people from around the world to be on your team, as opposed to the people that are willing to move to your city. You know, the example I give often is if I were to assemble a, you know, football team here in Austin, Texas, where I'm at, right? There's, you know, 2 million people here. It'd be a decent football team, right? But if I assemble the best players in all the United States, my U.S. team is probably going to beat my Austin team. And then if I were to extend the denominator again to, you know, 7-8 billion people in the world and chose the best football players in the world, though controversial, maybe, you know, in Texas here, like who says that my global best team isn't going to beat my Austin team? Right. I mean, of course, like everyone's like, of course, that's going to be. So then why aren't we looking at our staffs in that same way? Like, go get the best people from around the world. So the remote first organizations are going to have that staffing capability. And then they're going to have to solve the other problems, right? On how do you solve remote culture and how do you, you know, go and build an organization that way. But either barbell works. It really does, right? The problem is that the people are trying to kind of do this weird thing in the middle on the hybrid side of the world, and that actually is going to fail. And the reason that that's going to fail is that you know, when you're in an in-office environment, you've got, you know, you all of the nodes, all of the people, they have super high bandwidth connections between each other, right? Where they where you're meeting in the hallway, you're having asynchronous, you're having conversations, you know, and you're making decisions and what have you. And you're very rarely going to pull in that person from remote if you're meeting in the hallway with your boss and you're having a quick conversation. So as a result, you know, the people that are in the office have a higher access to information and therefore power than the people that are remote, and therefore the things that are, you know, hybrid there, where you're trying to pull in these remote people, it's going to fail because all these people feel like they're not actually connected. They're actually not connected to the power. They're not connected to the culture because there's office parties and all that other good jazz, right? And they feel like these separate nodes, and therefore the connection out to those nodes are super, super low bandwidth as a result. Right. So you're either, you know, have all high bandwidth in the fully office side, or when you're fully remote, you know, all of those high bandwidth connections have to connect and emerge in order for that company to be there. But everyone's on the same page, right? The CEO doesn't get a different Slack channel or Slack ding or whatever, or a different Zoom priority, right? Everyone's the same, basically. It's democratized in that particular sense, right? But that hybrid, again, in the middle, like, it will never work because those people on the remote side will feel disconnected from the organization. So long answer, sorry, but passionate about that particular topic.
Clearly, and actually I want to ask a follow-up then, because you're managing and enabling a lot of these remote teams. What's the methodology, technique, guidance that you're giving to the managers and groups of teams to create those high bandwidth connections?
Yeah, 100%. Right. So as I mentioned, there's the upfront part where you have to hire the right people into the team, right? And the right people isn't just the skills. It's really some of the other soft elements that matter a lot, as well as really being cognizant about how folks communicate to each other. But the second part is really we spend a lot of time on the remote culture element of it. It's like, guys, it isn't just about, you know, getting hired guns on the squad. It's really about how those teams can really gel together, and building that team culture matters a lot. And then monitoring that team culture. We've done a lot of work with some of the researchers at Stanford to be able to say, how can you tell that a remote team is actually engaging well together? And you can, again, look at the sentiment, look at the message that they're sending. You can really look at who are arsonists versus firefighters and kind of look at that team dynamic that's occurring in there. But then we spend a lot of time ensuring that, again, that those high bandwidth connections on ensuring that there's the right level of asynchronous communication and the right level of synchronous communication that all gel together to go make an effective team. And all of that has to be there in order for that team to be really effective.
Well, you have just described all of the work that I've been telling IT services companies that they should focus on enabling their customers to do, because it's high value. So, Andy, I really appreciate you joining me today. If people are interested in learning more, what's a great way to get in touch?
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, Gixxer.com, but I'm always happy to field discussions directly. I think that, you know, there's tons and tons of room for these IT service shops to utilize these cloud teams, right? Where, you know, I think of it much like AWS, right? Where, like, you know, it used to be that we would go, you know, spin up a server closet and pay for a bunch of servers, but now you hit a button and you fire up a server. You know, teams should be that same way, where you just hit a button and you fire up a team and they're a great team, right? So I think that can certainly augment and supplement a lot of these IT server shops and what have you out there that may or may not necessarily have the specific talent in their team to be able to go make that happen. So always happy to help on Gixxer side of the world, but I'm passionate on kind of how do we all partner together from a cloud perspective to leverage these human cloud elements of it and be able to help one another really go and advance this service space as a whole.
Awesome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Dave.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit MSPradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.